States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yes, Director Muthart?
Present.
Director Ohilske?
Here.
Director Storm?
Here.
Vice President Wright?
Here.
President Baltimore?
Here.
Thank you.
All right. Let's... Can I have a reading out of closed session?
Yes, President Baltimore, members of the staff, and audience. The board did go into closed session at 6 p.m. this evening in regards to two separate sections. First, under the Government Code Section 54956.9(d)(1) regarding existing litigation, the board heard a report in regards to the ISJ, heard a report in regards to the bankruptcy, and heard a report in regards to RWQCB and versus LOCSD, gave direction in two of those three matters, that being LOCSD and this third item, RWQCB, but took no reportable action. In regards to Government Code Section 54957, that's a conference with labor negotiators in regards to the negotiations with SLOCIA. They heard a report from the chief negotiator but took no reportable action. And that closes my report.
All right. Thank you. All right. Before we begin the open session, I just want to bring up something that it's in the agenda, but I want to bring it up again, that this is probably going to be a meeting that's going to stretch our time, so we're going to have the public comment 2 minutes throughout the whole meeting, okay? So I just want to clarify that. And then, again, just as our bylaws say, if you could state your name and your place of residence when you have a public comment. Very good. All right. So I'd like to reconvene open session and then presentation on the hearings.
Yes. Mr. President, members of the board, you're going to have a presentation this evening, a public hearing to consider adopting a water shortage contingency plan pursuant to Water Code Section 375. This will be a public hearing. You will receive public testimony and by motion and roll call vote adopt the resolution if you choose of 2014-18. Conducting the presentation this evening will be Rob Miller.
Oh, there. Thanks, Ann. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and the public. I'd like to walk through a presentation tonight to discuss our water shortage contingency plan. This is an item that's been before the board in some form on a couple of different occasions. The plan has been advanced in several elements, and I'd like to walk through the different stages and the different policy items that you'll be considering. The meat of the plan, for those of you who are looking at this, the staff report is contained in the tables at the back that talk about the five different stages, the triggers that get us into those stages, and then the prohibitions, things that you can't do when you're in the stage, and how much water is allocated to each customer in the various stages. A couple of things to keep in mind as I walk through the presentation. Number one, this water shortage contingency plan only applies to the district's water service area. So, of course, the district only serves about half of the population of Los Osos, and the other half is served by two other purveyors, the Golden State Water Company and S&T Mutual Water Company. While we do hope that the other purveyors act in kind and adopt smart water shortage plans, this is specifically for the district's water customers. Want to make that clear. Also, as we talk about mandating reduction in water quantity, that results in less revenue because of less water sales for the district. The district's currently in the process of developing a water rate study that will analyze some of the financial issues surrounding the loss of those water sales. So in the event that we find that some of the penalties considered here result in a financial hardship for the district, at some future date you may see an item coming back before you to amend certain of the financial aspects of the plan based on the recommendations of the rate study consultant. Wanted to make those two things clear as we move forward. So within this water shortage plan, there are five stages that reflect different levels of drought and different levels of impacts to our groundwater basin. Some of you may know the sole source of water within the district is groundwater, and when that resource is struggling, we don't have a backup resource. So first we'd like to start with stage one, which we're calling the alert stage, and really we're going to most likely spend much of our time within that stage, because 1 year of below average rainfall will trigger this stage one alert. We're asking for a reduction target of 5% primarily through voluntary conservation within stage one. We're triggering this by a climate trigger where we get less than 17 inches of rainfall at the old Los Osos landfill site where there's a county monitored rain gauge. Some of the prohibitions when we're in stage one is we'd like outdoor irrigation to occur between the hours of 8 p.m. and 7 a.m. And frankly, that's prudent practice anyway. So if you're not doing that, you should change your time clock, because that should be done all the time. The use of potable water to wash sidewalks, walkways, the things that result in water running off, basically, are prohibited. And these are smart water-wasting things that probably should not be done in general. The use of non-drinking water fountains, except for those using recirculated water. Obviously, we don't want to waste water for decorative purposes. And then, in general, the use of water which results in flooding or runoff. So if you see water flowing down the gutter, that, of course, is a concern in any stage, but certainly within stage one. The expectation, if we're in stage one, is for our average residential customer or multifamily customer to use no more than 183 gallons per day. That's based on a historical baseline that was present in 2011-2012 and a reduction of 5%. The reason we didn't use 2013 is because the year was so dry, our per household use went up a little bit, and we didn't want to have an artificially high baseline. For commercial uses, we're asking for voluntary conservation, and the penalties within this stage are essentially no mandatory penalties. Okay, stage two, we're calling that the warning stage, and within that stage, our reduction target is 10%. Our climate trigger then becomes more severe if we have, we're already in stage one, and now over 2 years, we're still below our median rainfall, or over 3 years, we're averaging below, and you can see the other numbers for 4 years or 5 years. In essence, we're entering into a longer-term drought, and you're going to see this theme repeated throughout the different stages. And it's at that time that we'll begin triggering these further stages. So within stage two, of course, all the prohibitions within stage one would still apply. And then we add these. The use of fire hydrant from water from fire hydrants will limit to just fire suppression, of course, or flushing that's absolutely necessary to maintain health, safety, and welfare. Sometimes you have these flushing programs which are very routine, a lot of testing, that sort of thing. We want to keep that to an absolute minimum within stage two. The use of district potable water for construction. They would need to go use non-potable supplies as opposed to our potable supplies. The washing of any automobiles, any car washing, truck washing, unless you have... hold on just a second here. I believe we allowed that use unless you had an automatic shutoff device. Yes, it's not clear there on the slide. No, I'm wrong. the washing of automobiles, trucks, trailers, boats, and other types of mobile equipment not occurring upon the immediate premises of a commercial car wash or commercial service station. So once you're within stage two, sorry about that, you'll be prohibited from car washing. Again, within stage two, the use of potable water to irrigate lawns, landscape plantings, ground covers, and shrubs will be limited to 15 minutes per irrigation station or yard, and that shall only occur during the nighttime hours. And then we give some days of the week for odd and even numbered addresses. This will be very familiar to the board because just in the last meeting, you adopted a very similar measure because of the state's mandate to limit irrigation to twice a week statewide. And so this is in response to that and consistent with the language that the district adopted at their previous meeting. And then water main flushing shall only occur in emergency situations. The amount of water we expect to be used by the average residential customer, 174 gallons per day. And then commercial continues to be voluntary. And in the penalty phase, there are no financial penalties within this stage. Okay, stage three, what we call the emergency stage. The reduction target becomes steeper at 20%. And I won't belabor the climate triggers, but in essence, it's a longer-term, more severe drought. And we also added within the plan something that we had not discussed at previous meetings, and that appears at the bottom of the slide, and it's very important to note this. One of the issues, and this is listed in the staff report, is that if we adopted this tonight, we'd immediately throw ourselves into the worst stage. And so staff thought it would be prudent to ramp into those stages over time, and so we added some time triggers to several of the stages, including this stage three. So we say in the absence of a water quality trigger, stage three shall be enacted no earlier than April of 2015. In the event that there's a water quality issue at either our 8th or 10th Street wells of 150 milligrams per liter or more, in essence, that we're beginning to get evidence of seawater intrusion at either of these wells, that would also trigger a stage three emergency. And there's also the total level of salt. Chlorides are historically the primary measure of seawater intrusion, but TDS, or total dissolved solids, can also be an important measure. So if either of those items exceed those values listed, we would trigger that stage three emergency. Some of the prohibitions, in addition to stage one and two, at this point, the use of potable water to irrigate lawns, landscape, ground cover, shrubs, crops, that's edible crops, shall be prohibited. So private landscaping would then cease under the stage three emergency. Community recreational facilities would be exempt from that irrigation prohibition. In keeping with some of the board's philosophies during the last meeting, we'd allow the schools to continue to irrigate and the community park. And that's, of course, we'd only control those facilities that are within our water service area, which would be the middle school and Baywood School. Wanted to also note that within this irrigation prohibition, there are some penalties. We'll be getting to those in a second. Our residential and multifamily household allocation would be 150 gallons per day. And really that reflects indoor use for a household of approximately three persons. And within the staff report and the table, and I won't go into it in great detail, in the event that you're in a household that has more than three people, because that's the basis of all these targets, you'd be able to come into the district and provide evidence that sign an affidavit and said, yeah, we have, you know, five people or more than three people in our household. And then for each individual over three people, you'd be given an additional allocation of 50 gallons per person per day. But assuming that you have three or less people, you'd be allowed 150 gallons per day. For commercial, will be requiring a 5% reduction in their baseline usage, and laundromats would be exempted from this requirement because we know that laundromats, of course, are wholly dependent on water use, and we have only two in the community, and we wanted those to continue to operate successfully. The penalty for all use that's above the allocation would be that use is above would be double the rate. So you'd see an immediate financial incentive to use less water. Two more stages to go. I know it's exciting. Stage four, we're calling the severe stage, and our reduction target is 30%. And you'll see here the climate-based trigger. And if we're seeing chlorides increasing to 250 milligrams per liter, or total dissolved solids or total salts to 850 milligrams per liter, some of the prohibitions, new water connections to the district's water system. In addition to the irrigation prohibitions that you heard before, you won't be able to irrigate the schools. So the schools would now be included within stage four for irrigation. The allocation would go down from 150 to 135. And at this point, if you had additional occupants in the house, you'd only get 45 gallons per additional occupant over three. And commercial, we're asking for a 10% reduction below their baseline, and again, laundromats would be exempted. The penalty now would be four times the rate for all use that's over your allocated water demand. And then stage five, finally, calling it the critical stage, trying to reduce the water use by 35%. And this is about all we can get out of this community, in staff's opinion. You'll see the climate triggers there. And you can see that there's a requirement here, and it didn't get listed in the previous slide, or I didn't highlight it. Stages 4 and 5 will not be enacted any sooner than April of 2016. So if we have another dry year, and next April we could trigger Stage 3, it'd take a whole additional year till April of 2016 to trigger Stages 4 or 5. Also wanted to note that none of the prohibitions apply to irrigating with recycled water. So if the schools have recycled water, by, say, summer of 2016, they'd be able to continue irrigating with that recycled water, just no potable water. The chloride trigger would be 500 milligrams per liter, which is the state's recommended maximum for chlorides, and then total dissolved solids, 1,000. The allocation would go down to 125 gallons per day, again, based on a three-person household. For commercial, 15% reduction below baseline, laundromats exempted. And then the penalty would be similar to stage four, though the baseline is less, so it'd be easier to get into that penalty phase. That concludes my discussion of the different triggers. I did want to note that legal counsel's assisted in the drafting of the ordinance, or drafting, excuse me, of the resolution. Sorry, you can slap me, Mike. And the tables become an attachment to that resolution to form the complete picture. And be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Do you have any questions, clarifying questions from the board?
Yeah, I was just wondering if, Rob, if you wanted to go through the reversal of these, the D triggers.
Yeah, thank you. One of the things that we added, which we didn't have in previous versions of the plan, is how do we get out of the triggers? Thank you, Leonard. And these are listed in the staff report, but they weren't included in the slides here. But in essence, if we're in stages 1 and 2, and also in basically in all the stages, if we have a return to normal rainfall, then we de-trigger or come out of the stage. When we're in stages 4 and 5, Staff is recommending that we don't transition all the way back to stage one. We transition to stage two for an additional year if we're already in stages four and five, if we have a severe drought. So essentially, if we turn to normal rainfall, we'd come out of the triggers. Also, if we have a water quality trigger, then we have to have two consecutive semi-annual samples below those concentrations to come out. And the reason for that is that there's sometimes anomalies, and maybe we have a short-term recovery and the seawater front's moving in and out. We want to make sure we're having a sustained recovery before we come out of a trigger if we're having a water quality issue. And those are listed in detail on the table, and I'd be happy to answer any additional questions. Thank you.
Yes.
I just want to clarify for the public, too, that if this was in place now, we would be in stage five, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Yes, Director Wolski.
Yeah, and I appreciate your adding the D-triggers because that was my concern last time. And we discussed this prior, but there's the interchangeability of the term seawater intrusion and saltwater intrusion. I mean, I understand in our particular climate or in our particular geographic situation, it's seawater intrusion, but is there really any difference, and are the terms interchangeable?
They're essentially interchangeable in function, but the term seawater intrusion is much more precise and appropriate. So if we do have saltwater intrusion cropping up, the word seawater intrusion is preferred.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. I have one. So I understand. So right now, based on the climate, we'd be in stage five. But we currently have a study out on seawater intrusion, and so we have not made, we don't know if that's trigger can still, meaning that we said it based on climate triggers that it won't be until April 2015 or April 2016, but what if our study comes back and shows that triggers have been hit?
That's a good point. There's really two things that are happening. One is we are waiting the final results of a seawater intrusion snapshot where we're looking at 15 different wells, and that will show the location of the seawater front as it's coming in and give us more information. The district does test for chlorides routinely in its own wells separate from that, and we know at this point we don't have any chloride concentrations that are problematic in our 8th or 10th Street wells, so we know that tonight. So if you adopt this tonight, we won't be going into any triggers based on water quality.
Very good. Okay. All right. So with that, I'd like to move to public comment. This is a hearing. Open the hearing and take public comment. Again, due to the volume of the meeting tonight, 2 minutes is the time you'll be allotted to speak. I know.
And apparently the mic was off. Again, Julie Tacker. My question, when we get to stage four and five and the irrigation of the schools or parks, et cetera, you also have the edible crops. There's some... I have two concerns. If the purple pipe or the recycled water is not available until maybe later that year, those lawns will be dead and maybe can't come back. So I'm wondering if there's some relief that the schools could keep going until the purple pipe's available so that the irrigation does, you know, the community can enjoy the lawns. But the other thing you say about the edible crops, I don't believe the purple pipe is safe for organic use or organic crops, and community gardens or that sort of thing I don't think would benefit from the purple pipe water. And I think we have several community gardens already in place. I think one might be a business or both might be businesses. I'm not sure how that works, but I have a concern that, you know, that's a recreational use as well. And if you take that away, people, you know, this town's already losing or has lost the ability to recreate, and this would be a further disadvantage. So that was kind of my thought, and if you guys had some thoughts on how the public can still benefit from those recreational uses of the water before a purple pipe comes around.
Thank you.
Okay, this question I owe to B.F. Skinner, who you probably all encountered in Psych 1. Lou Tornatsky, I'm not B.F. Skinner. The way this was described, Rob, is that
if you exceed a certain level
of...
Tornatsky, you have to address your comments to me.
Okay, question I asked for him. So if the usage exceeds a certain level, that has implications for penalties and negative things at the really individual level, individual household. But you're not monitoring that instantaneously. There's no monitoring of what the daily usage is. And if you had that, maybe on an experimental level, you could really get on top of one's behavior. This is really, you're trying to shape behavior to be concordant with what we need to do as a community. So I don't know if any of that sort of stuff is going on elsewhere in the world, but I think it would be useful to look at it or see if something's out there like that so that we could get the red light at night and Lynette took too long a shower and we got to whatever. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Boy, this is way out here. Lindy Owen from Los Osos. Number one, the after dark thing. I already talked to a senior who said, I have to go out with a flashlight, and if I fall and hurt myself, I'm going to be really mad. Why can we not have, like Cambria has, that it be before 8 a.m. and after 5 p.m. when it's cooled down and it doesn't make that much difference? It's hard on a garden to be wet in the middle of the night anyway. As far as the laundromat going, right now, many people in Cambria already go to laundromats because their allotment for their home is so small. I really think it's time to bump up the front-loading washing machines, and maybe that's a time to get the county to get going with our $3 million sitting there doing nothing, so that every home can have it and they can gray water that to their garden. So it's a total win-win, and I wish we could see more of those washing machines going in. I want to know how this meshes with Golden State's ordinances, if they've done anything, and I'm really concerned with the ISJ, especially the county who manages the private wells, and they've done nothing to ask the private well owners to cut back, and I'm not real happy seeing a private well with green, lush lawns, water running down the street, while the rest of us are running around with little pots and pans trying to save every ounce. And then as far as the community activities, this park is on a private well, and it's dumping water twice a week all over the street because the county doesn't have the maintenance people to fix the system. So I think the parks need to cut back a little bit, too. There's areas that could die off, depending on how serious we want to get about this drought. It should not be just on the backs of the homeowners that can't afford to do anything else. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dave Akey. I'm the president of the Omaha Democratic Club. And I'm here to offer an invitation to the candidates for the open positions on the CSD board.
We're talking about the emergency water shortage.
I cannot address something off the agenda?
That's coming later.
And yeah. There'll be a public comment for that?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem.
Lynette Tornatsky, Los Osos. I was wishing that I had been at the UAC meeting where this was discussed, because I'm still feeling confused, and I think it will be confusing to people who get the information on what we just saw about irrigation. Is there a difference between irrigation and hand watering? Because people who hand water and they have a shutoff on their hose can't possibly get as much done as a person who has a sprinkler system. They can turn that on for 15 minutes, but the person with, you know, going around from plant to plant, hand watering, that just isn't equitable. So I'm thinking there may not be as much compliance if people notice that, when I'm sure many people here do not have sprinkler systems. We certainly don't. And I certainly can't get it all done in 15 minutes. So it's sort of asking you to either pony up for a sprinkler system or just let your yard die. So I'm not sure that people are going to get on board without some clarification. Thanks.
Thank you.
Keith Swanson. It's about water supply. So what we're talking about, we're getting a resolution. We can figure out how we can resolve this. And we're in stage five, is what's been identified by the directors on the board, confirmed by Rob. But we're going to ease into this, where we already have a severe issue currently. We've had the county already identify that we have a stage three water issue, which has been in place for a number of years. We've also had a water conservation plan by the county for a couple years. I want to make sure that the nexus isn't always rainfall, and I'm glad to see that the chlorides is also going to be an issue as well. I was kind of researching this, and I found that in San Antonio, Texas, of all places, they have a way of measuring their aquifer. The level of their aquifer is actually their nexus and implements whatever they're going to do to cut back on water usage. So I'd just like to know where we are right now, Rob, if it is stage five, and where we are, and you said in 8th and 10th, what those particular chloride levels are to date, and how this is all advanced, because I think saltwater intrusion is already advanced with all of the things that Los Osos has done a great job of conserving water, rates being one of them, and we're still going in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening, Board. My name is Chuck Cicinia, resident of Los Osos. I share some of Keith's concerns about what are the existing chloride levels at the 8th and 10th Street wells. And it seems like commercial reduction targets are quite a bit less than residential. And is there just a reason for that? Do commercial people just assume that they don't waste water? I'm not so sure that that's true. And it seems like 1 year of rainfall, adequate rainfall, to drop two levels of severity is pretty optimistic. 1 year of decent rain and we're going to back off of everything. It makes me a little bit nervous. I think we should be a little bit more cautious about that. But I'm glad you're doing this, even though we're a little bit late to the dance, because it seems like we should be well beyond implementing stage three. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. And I wanted to, as you consider adoption of this plan, I wanted you to contemplate a couple things, if you would, please. The first thing is captured in a brief letter that I wrote today, and hopefully you had a chance to take a look at it. I emailed it over to staff and to the board members individually. And that relates to the level or stage four and five levels of this plan and the connection prohibitions that are established as a result of that. In essence, my request is for you to consider exempting projects and their associated intent to serve letters that have water retrofit certificates or the equivalent. So these are folks typically that have already gone out and retrofitted under Title 19 of the county code at a 2-to-1 ratio. So they've gone out there and earned more water than they'll use ultimately. So again, I'd like you to consider exemption of those under stage 4 and 5. And then secondly, if and when the plan progresses to stage 4 and 5, I would suggest that we accelerate our capital improvement program. In other words, we speed up the rate at which we install infrastructure, particularly central and east side wells, because ultimately that's going to have a favorable impact. And if we can take some of these other wells, like Palisades, out of service and replace them with a new central or east side well, we're going to be going a long way to address the seawater intrusion situation. That's all I had for now, and I'm available for questions if you have any. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Richard Margetson. I'm a little concerned that the Utilities Committee didn't get to weigh in on this new information about what's going to be a trigger. Every community in this county already has an ordinance in place and is at some stage. You all agreed. Keith said you all agreed we're at stage 5. Rob agrees we're at stage 5. But we can't even get to stage 3 before April of next year, and stage 5 till 4 or 5 till a year after that. What are you waiting for? What other evidence does this board need? You know, you guys talk a good game about being disappointed about the county and their role in the wastewater project and water conservation and all that, but to hear you have an opportunity to do something and you basically put forth an ordinance that's basically just a paper document for the next year and a half. We're in stage 5 now, and you can't even implement that till April of 2016. So I guess we know, you know, how the development community influenced this ordinance. It's interesting, some of the speakers that have just come up, you know, past years, oh, we got to conserve, we can't have this, we can't have that. But let's take out all the requirements for any building. We're in stage 5 now, gentlemen. There should be no building till we know seawater intrusion is stopped. Not slowed down, stopped. And it hasn't stopped.
Thank you. All right, seeing no other public comment, I'd like to close the hearing and bring it back to the board. Okay.
Tom Salmon. A couple of months ago, I came here to discuss about your wasting of 150 million gallons of water, 426 acre feet, and addressed the letter that you gave the county. We're in the problem of water shortages, not just because of the drought, not just because of the mismanagement by this board and other boards. We are in a water problem because you have a group have failed to do your job. Around town, I see here signs that say conserve water. There was none of those signs around when you were allowing the contractors to force feed into the bay 150 million gallons of water. Now, I realize it's a national process of water coming down the hill into the bay. When you take the groundwater at the level of the bay and you suck it out, you force that water to go faster. Now, throughout this community, we have settling bases that accept that water. You had a system in place to save that water. But instead of saving 6 months' worth of water, you sat there on your hands like, well, we won't want to use the term because I don't want to be called racist again. But you sat on your hands and did nothing. This information was given to you. It was given to you legally. It was given to you scientifically. And you as a group did nothing. You wrote a letter that my child could have written with no backup, no litigation. We spend tons of money on legal services, but we refuse to address the water to the county. The community needs to know that you are the reason that we have this water problem, not anybody else. And I was surprised, for as educated as you tell me that you are, that you don't understand the hydraulics of the water system. I read it on someone's website, and I responded it to you. You don't have a clue, sir, how water works, how hydraulics works. But yet you're going to force this community.
Thank you. All right. So please help remind me that was Mr. Salmon's comments for items not on the agenda.
No.
That had no... That did not address anything about the emergency water shortage ordinance that was on here. And so I was being patient, waiting for the summary, and it didn't come. So thank you.
Mr. President, if I might address public comment.
Yes. Oh, no. Now I'm going to close the hearing.
Oh, thank you.
Now you can address the public comments.
Thank you. Julie had some, I mean, there's lots of policy issues here, as folks are seeing in this public comment, and hard to work through the decision factors, but Julie had some good thoughts. Her comment was that if in 2016 we're disallowing irrigation of the schools in April, could that be extended to a later month to allow recycled water to come online later that summer? I understand that point. Of course, that's countered by other points that you also heard in public comments, so it's two sides to this contentious issue. She was also talking about the community gardens, and she's correct that while crops can be irrigated with recycled water, there are a lot of specific rules that have to be followed. So in general, I would say community gardens aren't necessarily a good candidate for recycled water because of how much management it takes to pull that off. So that's definitely a factor. and then as far as monitoring, I know Lou was asking about the instantaneous monitoring. Technology is getting better. I know now they have technology where you can read water meters as you drive down the street, but it's still only once a reading cycle. I think hopefully within the next number of years we're going to see tech where you can get that instantaneous feedback. It's certainly available at a very high price, but we hope it's at a residential scale at some point. But right now, the technology is not yet cost-effective to do that. But I'm hoping that it will be at some point. There was some feedback on the nighttime irrigation. I understood that comment that, you know, when I think nighttime, I don't think the middle of the night. I think in the dawn hour, just as it's right before it gets light. But I understand those points. And addressing front-loading washers and those conservation plans, I think, is an excellent point. Those programs need to be advanced. As far as Golden State Water's ordinances and requirements, they do have some mandatory water shortage plans in place. They need PUC authorization to invoke those plans. And so that's a step that they would have to take. They've expressed some willingness to do that. It won't be an exact match with this plan, but they do have a plan on file that they'd have to get permission to implement. I'm not sure about S&T Mutual. And Lynette was discussing the issue of hand watering within stage two. Of course, when you get to the later stages, it's moot because irrigation is prohibited on a residential scale. But that 15-minute requirement, I'm sure that folks, because it's a voluntary requirement, there's no penalties, we're asking for people to consider the idea of irrigating twice a week and something equivalent to that 15-minute per cycle, assuming an automated system. So there, I'm sure that if folks use the same type of judgment with their hand watering, perhaps that would be appropriate. It is a voluntary thing that we're asking them to do. But I understand the confusion. For Keith Swanson, he was stressing the fact that we're already in a level 3 severity in the county's mind. So again, on the conservation side of things, aquifer levels here unfortunately can't be used because seawater artificially maintains those levels. Otherwise, that would be a great way to measure it because you can do that in real time. Right now, 8th and 10th Street chloride levels are at their historical backgrounds. you know, in the 80s, something like that. And so we're not seeing any evidence right now, nor have we seen evidence of seawater intrusion at those wells. The commercial reduction targets, I understand the point, and that was an expected comment. The thought is that commercial does use water more sparingly because it's a business expense. Most of the use is indoor here in Los Osos and for restaurants and so forth. So staff felt that the reductions were fair based on a baseline so as not to put our businesses under. So that was a judgment call, but the board certainly could revisit that. The issue of coming out or de-triggering after 1 year of adequate rainfall, also understood that comment. That's a policy choice for the board. We did say that if we were in stages 4 and 5, you would wait that additional year before you came out. And then if you were triggered based on water quality, what was actually happening in the aquifer, you would take those 2 semi-annual samples to come out. But I understand the comment. Jeff had a letter that he had previously submitted for the record, agreed on advancing capital improvements related to better infrastructure. And then Richard had the strong comments about going more rapidly into stages 4 and 5. Just so everyone's on the same page, stage 3 could trigger, I don't know, what is that, 9 months from now, approximately 8 to 9 months, allowing no outdoor irrigation at all in residential properties by next April. Whether that's fast enough, certainly a difficult policy question for the board to grapple with. And I'd be happy to address any other questions.
I think you hit all the ones that I had.
Yeah. I have one. This might be for staff other than Rob. How are we going to notify the water customers? What's the protocol?
This will be part of the outdoor water conservation program, and we will include information with regards to this ordinance.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is like when we say, you know, we change the trigger or we change the severity level that moves into that, how do we notify the people that we're moving into that and this is going to affect you?
We'll do that through pre-planning. Part of it will be on their bill. Part of it will be on signs around the community. I mean, just any mechanism that we can use to get it out to our customers.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
I have a few comments.
No comments, just questions.
Just questions to,
right okay. now in case.
All right.
No? All right. And I'd like to bring it back to the board for discussion.
Okay.
So with that.
Well, I have one thing in regards to... you're talking about Golden State has, they have to go to the PUC to get their triggers essentially implemented. Is it helpful for us to send a letter to the PUC for them or talk to Golden State about, we'll be glad to do that, to, you know, expedite that process?
Mr. President, if I might, they've indicated that letters of support are helpful when they do things in front of the PUC. Whether that actually results in a PUC action is harder to determine.
I have one question, clarification. So when we prohibit irrigation, what's to stop somebody from saying, here's my $1,000 a month, I'm keeping my lawn green?
Excellent point. We're not anticipating staffing up with people to go lot to lot. Certainly the neighborhood factor, peer pressure, and then the penalties, folks who want to pay the very, very high penalty and be non-community-minded would have the ability to do that. I think statistically, and I think our rate study consultants mirrored this as well, particularly within this local coastal community, you won't have many that do that. You'll have a high rate of compliance.
Right, because going back to Lynette's point is that, you know, you get into the irrigation, but it brings out the fact that, hey, it's about 2.5 gallons, or the dollar buckets from the dollar store, that it takes my shower to warm up. And so now my roses get, even though it's indoor use, you know, and that's not considered irrigation, I'd hope.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to bring it back to board for discussion. Director Ohuski.
I just wanted to address one thing that came up. Again, I'm appreciative of the D-triggers in there because that was an important item to me. But I think that as far as what the triggers are themselves, I think the thing that we discussed last time this came before us is rainfall is really predictive, whereas the water quality itself is determinative because that's measurable at the time. And quite frankly, our modeling doesn't know right now how the rainfall affects our groundwater. But we do know when we do the measurements in the groundwater table what that chloride levels are and what the contamination level is. So this is really in response to the question about why, if we're in level 5, are we only, you know, implementing this? Well, we're in level 5 based on rainfall, but we're not in level 5 based on water quality. And when we actually get our testing done on the water quality of the wells, we may change levels. But for our first step right now, we're going into 3. So I don't see that as being unreasonable, quite frankly. If our tests come back from the well testing we're involved in right now and would take us to a different level, then we'll go to a different level immediately. So I think this is a very, very good first step, quite frankly, because it's the water quality that's important and how that's measured. And I think the other thing that is, if this doesn't work, it can be amended at any time. I mean, this isn't a permanent ordinance. So quite frankly, I do have one minor amendment I'd like to make to this thing, and I'll bring that up later, but I'm in favor of it the way it's written right now, and I'll be supportive of moving forward with this evening.
Thank you. Director Storm?
I just wanted to say I'm a Golden State customer, and so I got this flyer in the mail about their restrictions, and they're basically falling back on the State Water Board's restrictions and saying that they have a plan and don't do anything. So in addition to Director Ohilski's concerns about the D-triggers the last time this came up, I also worried about what's it like when your neighbor across the street has different requirements than you. But, you know, we can ask 100 questions about what's fair and how this all works, but when you're in a crisis or when you're in a problem, lots of things that are unfair are going to happen. And so it's, you know, I appreciate all the comments that we received, and those all sound like things that, you know, we can adjust in an ongoing process. But unfortunately, when we do have a problem, we have to take steps, and those things will unfortunately be casualties of this process. And hopefully it'll rain cats and dogs this winter, but we can't bank on that. And so somebody has to be the adult in the room and step up. And so I'm hoping that we will be that.
Thank you. Dr. Muhart?
Well, first off, I want to thank you, Rob, for getting this back to in front of the board so quickly and so thoroughly. And I'm going to, and Ron. It didn't do it in a vacuum, and Ron Munns was definitely an integral part of the development of this. And that is one of the reasons that came up why we aren't going back to the UAC with this is because the subcommittee, having Ron Munns in there, was involved with this the entire process. One of the things, if we recall from a month ago or when we talked about this last, was when we first brought this to the board, when I say we, the UAC, we got into a quagmire with rate studies. And I think we felt that this could be detrimental to getting this furthered along. We didn't have a good firm timetable on the rate study, so we needed to get the urgency of getting this something going preceded this. So this is our first step. The timetables give us a chance to get rate studies in process in place to handle the more severe stages. And as Director Ohilski said, it's not set in stone. We can amend this as we go along, as climate changes, etc. The other thing I wanted to address, what is fortunate about this meeting today is that we have, not only do we have this, but also on further agenda items, we have our emergency, our conservation plans too. So the and we also have our public relations plan as well. When you put all three of these elements together, you have a very healthy process here. The conservation, along with our public relations, is designed to change behavior. And our public relations, as we've stated, our conservation efforts do go across borders. They are not part of just the CSD. So your neighbor across the street is going to see the same information, the public information, to encourage conservation. When we get to that, when we see some of the ideas and things that comes out, it's going to be a community effort, a community hopefully change of behavior, and we're all going to be on the same page. Our neighbors are going to be competing to save water. I mean, that's the goal, to get people to really work together and challenge each other to save water and share ideas. So it's really a package deal here, and so I appreciate it, and I think it's a great start, and I support this fully.
Thank you. Vice President Wright?
Yeah, I'd like to echo what Director Muthart said. I think that the community should really be thankful for the hard work that the UAC committee with Leonard, the subcommittee staff on doing this. I think it's a long time coming, and I'm glad to see the back out triggers. That's really important to me, too. I think that in the question regards to, I wish we had more control over it, but regarding commercial usage, unfortunately the vast majority of commercial in Los Osos is not with us, it's with Golden State, so we have no control over that. But I fully support this. I think that it's a key ingredient for moving forward with the rate study, and I like what I see.
Thank you. Almost in total agreement with everybody. Definitely want to start off by thanking Ron Munns and Rob Miller and the UAC committee and Director Muthart for bringing this here today. I mean, a lot of work's done in that, and then staff pulling it all together on those recommendations. And again, with the timetables, we still have a rate study going out there to confirm or not confirm what we have suggested in this. And when you consider the rate study and the fact that we'll be going through winter, then the spring makes sense for putting the first trigger into place if we're still at that level. Overall, nothing's perfect, but I think it's definitely good step out of the blocks. The only thing to change that I would like to see is on the climate change. If we're in stage 5, we don't drop down to 2, but we drop down to 3. But other than that, I want a clarification for people listening to make sure I understand also. Our current 8th Street and 10th Street wells are about 80 milligrams per liter, and the first trigger is 150. Did I understand that right?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, we're about halfway there, so.
Yeah, and when I say it's not like they were at 40 10 years ago and now they're at 80. They've been at 80 for that the whole time we've been monitoring them, so they're static right now. If we start to get seawater influence, they will steadily go up.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. With that, I would maybe some discussion now on that suggestion by me for the dropping out, as we referred to it, the trigger. Yeah. Good. Director Wolski?
Yeah. I appreciate your comments, Greg, but I'm opposed to that. I think we should stay with the flexibility to go back to 2. Because, again, rainfall is predictive. If we're talking about water quality, we're not going back to that level. We're just going back to that level on a rainfall trigger. So I'm comfortable with the way it's written right now, the way it is. So. Yeah, when we get ready for a motion, I'll move as is.
Right. So, any other thoughts on that? No?
Well, I would like to echo Director Ohilski's thoughts on that.
Because I'm just trying to avoid having to make a motion and then put an amendment and go through the steps, or else. We've only got two. So you know, 2-1 is the indication. And so
I would agree with Director Ohilski as well.
Okay. There you go.
I'll concur on that, because I think that, to me, the chloride level triggers a bigger issue than the rainfall. And so I think that, you know, and I think like we were saying, it is flexible. We can come back to it if things go south. So I think, you know, as is good.
Okay. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and as we do more modeling and we get more into this, I think that we'll have more data. But based on the data right now, I'm comfortable the way it's written. So okay. If that's okay, I'd like to move that we adopt it. Yep. And I do have one clarification I'd like to make. It's not a change, but just a clarification, because this issue has come up from a number of people that I've spoken with in the community about this 15-minute of watering, and I did talk to Rob about this today. That doesn't have to be at a single session, okay? Because I've had some people come up to me and say, if I water for 15 minutes, I'm getting runoff on the street because I'm living on a slope, okay? So it's in one evening, but it's not all at one time. So if you're on an irrigation clock, for example, you could do 7 minutes and 8 minutes and separate them by 5 hours. So it doesn't have to be 15 minutes in a single lump sum. So I just wanted to clarify that. But I'll move to adopt the resolution, and I don't, I guess I'll read it. I can do it. I got it. I move that the board adopt resolution 2014-18 establishing a water shortage contingency plan.
I'll second it.
All right, with that, can I have a discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then I'd like to move to a roll call vote.
Director Ohilski?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Thank you.
I would also, I think that I would, it would be productive for everybody since, as we mentioned, you know, compliance is voluntary at this point, but I'd like to see us go out with a strong press release tomorrow indicating that the board takes this as a serious problem and that we've adopted this emergency ordinance today. So I'd like to see staff do that tomorrow.
I concur with that, and I'm very happy this. I started working on this. This is the first day I worked on the UAC before I was a board member. When I was on the UAC member, this is our first thing we started working on, and it's taken this long to get this far, so I'm pretty happy about that. Yeah. I'm happy that it took that long, happy that it's done, that we're on our way.
All right. So this time I'd like to move on to agenda item 8, public comment for items not on the agenda. It helps me out and we don't repeat what happened before. Again, our bylaws ask people kind of to line up behind. Don't stay in your seat because I almost cut somebody off from making a comment before. So not that you have to make it known before the speaker sits down that somebody else is moving up. All right. Thank you. With that, first speaker.
Keith Swanson, Los Osos. Probably a lot of the people that are here probably don't remember, it was probably 9 or 10 years ago when the president of this board decided to limit the time of public comment. The result of that was that this room, with this wall removed, was standing room only, holding signs, "We want our 3 minutes." 1 minute taken away, you guys meet once a month. This is the only time that the opportunity for this public to talk to you about whatever's on their mind or whatever's on your agenda. And to restrict that to save what? You know, it's an awkward dialogue anyways, because you guys talk and then we come up and we talk and then you talk amongst yourselves and we can't respond. I just don't understand the thinking of reducing public comment. And I'm seeing this trend in other public agencies. And I just don't understand this trend of excluding somebody that works for us. You're elected by the public to do public business. And so I encourage Mr. Baltimore from this point on to allow public comment to be 3 minutes. And, you know, if you have a room full of people, you ask people if they want to speak for 1 minute, 2 minutes, or 3 minutes, but allow them their time. And this is an unusual amount of people that are here today. Generally, it's three or four people that make public comment. You may not like what they have to say, or it might be redundant to you, but it's their right to come here and say whatever they want to say. As far as the dog park thing that's coming up, I just want the people that are supporting this to understand the nexus of what's hooked to this, getting a dog park, as much as I support the idea. And I also want to point out that your agenda pointing... That's it.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Yes, my name is Dave Akey, and I wish to apologize for attempting to speak at the wrong place in the agenda earlier. I'm the president of the Immoral Democratic Club in Los Osos, and I know that the election is coming up of the CSD positions, and we'd like to invite any and all candidates to introduce themselves at our meeting this coming Tuesday, the Tuesday the 16th at the Roundtable Pizza. We meet at 7 o'clock. We get there about 6:30 and chow down on pizza or salad earlier. And if there's anyone in the audience or any of you board members that know candidates who are running, please convey this to them. Again, my name is Akey, A-K-E-Y. My cell number is 704-2323. My home number is 528-4832. And we just want to let the public know who these candidates are. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Akey.
Yes.
Roundtable in Morro Bay or Los Osos?
Roundtable at 10th here in Los Osos.
Very good.
Thank you for the clarification. Yeah.
Ken Christensen. I live on Rosina. My property adjoins a proposed dog park. Obviously, it's a concern to me because my backyard abuts it. I'm not opposed to dog park. I think it could be a good thing. I think a better idea would be community gardens. I think community gardens would serve the entire community. What's lacking in Los Osos is a central focal point, is a sense of community. There is a water issue. It can be resolved. There are ways of dealing with this. On meters, on recycled water. Also very important to me is a buffer zone. Dogs obviously can make a lot of noise. So this is Rosina Drive here. I think you need at least 100 feet of buffer zone, a green zone, trees and bushes. They're going to give a cushion on the noise. Further, a central area for gathering, a pavilion area, picnic tables. The view from that area is surprisingly good. You see the entire bay in Morro Rock, even at the level of Los Osos Valley Road. I suggest parking coming off Pine Street so as not to create kind of a strip mall look along Los Osos Valley Road. A parking lot would be face-to-face with the church parking lot, which would not be a bother there. However, foot entrance from Los Osos Valley Road, possible dog park entrance along Broderson there, a smaller parking lot for the dog park, try and keep it separate from community gardens, a larger parking lot along Pine Street, a small building allowing for public lockers for the people who keep their tools and utilities. It's a very key property there. I think it'd be very wise to do a good thing. My plan, my design shows keeping all the existing trees, the large ones. Some have to be re-landscaped. But here's a chance to do something very beautiful and not simply open space for dogs running around. Not that that's a bad idea, but you could do something of quality and good taste to raise the profile of the community, bring people together, and have something worthwhile for the whole community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, Los Osos. Yeah, the idea of a park is fine. I think the dog park could share a community garden. We currently do have two community gardens that are doing quite well and using lots of water. I heard in the prior discussion the idea about quality being the issue about how we measure our water supply. And Regional Board agrees that it's Regional Water Quality Control Board. But when you have salt water or zero water, it's a matter of quality. So Regional Board is now beginning to look at the seawater intrusion issues as being in their purview. And, of course, they don't really have – nobody has the funds to fix all these overdrafted basins that so much of California is now facing this is what happens when you overdraft. I also want to object to 2 minutes. If you don't want to be here to hear the public, you probably should step down from your position. I just don't understand why you want to black out more. The commenter that came in and discussed that it was in your purview to get upset about 150 million gallons a quarter, half of a year of CSD water went into the bay, and it was not supposed to in the plan. And that's what we've asked you over and over again, is to get a backbone and stand up for this community while the county takes and charges us to ruin our water basin. Encourage you to keep trying to see that it's us versus them. This is not a little party between the county and us. They're not our friend. They never have been. That's why you got elected. That's why you're here.
Thank you.
Good evening. It's Chuck Cecinia again. One thing I forgot to mention on your last agenda item, really nice staff report, except for the key items, that table, the print. I just about blew out some blood vessels in my eyes. It's a little bit fine. You can hardly read that. So that's a consideration. You know, could have been done better. Let's see. I'm going to leave you with some materials that the Los Osos Sustainability Group has sent to the Coastal Commission about water supply in this area. Some encouragements to hold the county's feet to the fire regarding the water conservation plan that's associated with the wastewater project. It's not strong enough. It's not strong at all. The county has no intention of saving our water basin. And these are some things that we think should be stepped up with that effort. And I'll leave you a disc and a hard copy of that. And pay attention to the Sierra Club letter that was sent to the Board of Supervisors a week or two ago. It's really important, too. I do not understand people so concerned about our water basin and yet willing to trade a dozen or so will serves for a dog park when we are surrounded by open space. We have the greatest dog park in the world in the middle of town next to the library right now. I do not understand that willingness to make that trade. Last thing, the debate. I emailed each candidate today that is running for office and suggested that here, except Craig, I couldn't have your email because it wasn't listed in the county's election materials, did not state. This is the best place for debate, not a church. We get more people in here. I mean, if there's a church that's bigger, okay. Everyone said we want live attendance. I think it should be taped, played on Channel 20. Maybe the Democratic Club could help sponsor it to defray the cost. It would be $100, $125 per candidate. That seems steep for some people. We need a debate. We need it televised.
Thank you.
Is this yours? Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and the last, you know, Marshall, when you were the chair, and even before that, I think, there was a time on the agenda for the board to address the questions that had been asked at the previous meeting. And I'd say it's going on over a year that we haven't had our questions answered. And last month I asked about the 7 assessments that appear to have been paid in the claims in bankruptcy. And if I'm wrong, I want to know that. I want an explanation, and I want someone to explain that to me and the public. So if someone could bring that back, I would very much appreciate it. Speaking of bankruptcy, The Measure B case is going for injunctive relief, and I would like an explanation for the public what that all means. There's a court date later this month with the regional board also, as the party. The other thing with the regional board is they're meeting on the 25th of September, and they're going to lift the CDOs, and I think your board should be there. I know the public is there to support that rescission of the CDOs. Something else happening on the 25th, and maybe one of you was going to mention it in your closing comments, but I would like to invite the public on a tour of the wastewater treatment facility, 5 p.m.
There's a letter or an article on Mr. Storm's blog site about CAL FIRE and Golden State dealing with the location of fire hydrants and fire flows, and that he's, and in this entire article he identifies himself as a CSD director, co-chair of or vice chair of the Emergency Services Committee, and he's circulating a petition to walk into Golden State in hand demanding this information. I don't ever remember this board or a committee giving that authority or authorizing the start of a petition process, especially, you know, the way it's presented that, you know, I'm going to walk in and basically shove it in their face and demand the results. You have a very tenuous relationship with them right now with the ISJ and getting them to move forward on certain issues. Is that really what the direction this board wants an individual member to go? And for clarification, Mr. Storm, CAL FIRE knows exactly where every fire hydrant in this district is. It's in their GPS system. They went and GPSed it in on every vehicle they have.
Thank you. All right. I'd like to close public comment for items not on the agenda. And I'll move to item 9. Administrative reports. That, Chief Veneras.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public. Once again, I am very appreciative and honored to be here tonight to address you with the July 2014 Chief's Report. Before I start, though, you have for you a handout for the fire safety fair that Station 15 South Bay will be conducting on October 11th from 11 to 3. There's also handouts in the back, and they're both in English and in Spanish. These handouts have been going out around the town. They've been going into school flyers and being posted at various locations. The first thing I want to draw your attention to is it's called a safety fair. It's one of the things we've done in response to what the ESC has been looking at to provide a more education out of the station to the public of Los Osos. So we've moved it from an open house, because it's no longer at the Station 15, it's downtown, and we're calling it a safety fair with an emphasis on educating the public. You'll see a lot more instruction going on with hands-on CPR and use of fire extinguishers. The fire safety house is being revamped and re-emphasized. We have been working very hard with our cooperators, CHP, the state parks, the Fire Safe Council of San Luis Obispo, and their focus group in San Luis Ambulance. And we've got commitments from those individuals to show up. CAL FIRE will be putting out a dozer, a wildland engine, as we always do. We'll be doing some demonstrations on the jaws of life, as we always do, but we'll be adding rope rescue and some other things from a fire safety standpoint, from an emergency response standpoint. So we're very excited about it, and I wanted to make sure we get that out early. The other thing I'd like to say is the Kiwanis of Los Osos have made a commitment to show up and do a tri-tip barbecue with all the proceeds going to the Alicia Ann Rouge Byrne Foundation. So again, we're very excited about that. So you have that handout in front of you. Feel free to stop by and see the place. It'll be good. I'm very excited about it. Mm-hmm. So in the month of July, Station 15 responded to a total of 109 calls. Four of those are simultaneous calls, with two of those requiring advanced life support from your paramedics. This is statistically a little bit above average. It was a busy month. as the summertime usually is. Of the 178 were medical aids, 35 requiring advanced life supports, 3 vehicle accidents, and 2 fires. Company 15 came back a total of 15 times to support the station firefighters. Also in the month of July, 2 of our firefighters resigned. One of them was Justin Trotter and one of them was Brian Merrill. Justin, as you probably remember, has been going back and forth between Antarctica and he's a Channel Islands National Park Service Ranger, and was just finding that after about 10 years of going back and forth, he was just having a hard time committing and doing what he needed to do for Company 15 and for the district, so he resigned. Firefighter Merrill just became a paramedic not too long ago and was hired in Riverside County by Cal Fire and is relocating to the greater Riverside area, if you can call it great. So in knowing that we had some openings up in the company, we started in July, and that's detailed in item 5, to recruit new firefighters and hire new firefighters. We had about 20-some-odd people, 22, 23 people come in. Two of those were not the sinking fund. The spreadsheet for the vehicle replacements up to the general manager in the next month. We did some inspections in the month of July for the hazard abatement. It started out, as you remember, a very normal year, but I can tell you that it's concluded very well. We have much less outstanding violations than we have in years past. It's probably about six or seven right now, and we're working with those folks. Most of them are hazard abatement. To our knowledge, all of the address issues that we dealt with are completed. That concludes my report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Yes, Chief. For the public, if you could explain the 2 checks that are in the packet, what they're for, and how we came to get them.
Yes, sir. The first check is from the County of San Luis Obispo for $1,966.95. That is reimbursement for expenses by the district at Station 15 for emergency preparedness from Office of Emergency Services in San Luis County relating to the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. The second one is $1,177.55. That is for reimbursement for when I take your expedition, the chief officer's vehicle, out of the district on fires. When I go out, I claim mileage on that and wear and tear. It's about $110 a day, somewhere in there. And so in this case, I went to Tehama Glen and to Santa Clara for a couple different fires, and that details the reimbursement. The interesting thing about this one is the package was put in, and when my executive assistant, Harmony Brown, and I were auditing the reimbursement, we realized that we'd been shorted these 2 months. So these 2 fires, one was in August and one was in September of 2013, we just received the reimbursement form because it took us that long then to contest the bill and get the final $1,177 that you guys were warranted.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? I just want to say thank you again for your leadership and for Cal Fire, because the Fire Safety Fair really is, it's very informative and it's top notch, and so be looking for it.
Okay, you know, there is some other. Do you have some other activities and some other people who are looking to join into that effort? And until we get confirmation on that, but it may even be growing bigger this year. From what I've talked about already. Thank you very much.
I know. Yeah. Utilities department report.
Don't lose your keys.
Good evening. My name is Margaret Faulkner, and I'm here to report on the operations of the utilities department for the month of July. And production for July was approximately 21 million gallons, and consumption for the period June 11th through August 12th was approximately 20.6 million gallons. The 15.3 in the staff note was a typo. I forgot to change. But the correct number is in the tables. Revenue was $187,468 for the same period. And
an annual water rate adjustment of 1.86% went into effect on July 1st, 2014, and customers are encouraged to come in and ask, you know, if they want to know how their bills were prorated. We found out, so. Production and runtime hours are listed in the tables on the bottom of the first page of the staff note. And as you can see, the runtime hours at Palisades were reduced. However, runtime hours for 10th Street and El Moro had to be increased to compensate. As far as water conservation is concerned, the staff attended the August 18th Farmers Market in Baywood Park. There's electronic messages continuing to be broadcast at the Rotary message board on the corner of South Bay and LOVR. And we encourage the public to stop by the office and pick up free water conservation fixtures. The staff has been working with the rate study consultant, and we look forward to the special meeting of the Finance and Utility Advisory Committees on September 10th at the Fire Department at 5:30 p.m. And as far as drainage is concerned, I'm still working on the annual report. So this concludes my report for this evening.
Thank you. Any questions? Real quickly, can you just help me with the type, just to remind people out there, the type of things they can get for water conservation? Of course, it's the faucets in the shower, but there's nozzles for their hoses that turn off.
Yes, we do have the.
And their test kits to see if your toilet's running or has a leak?
Yes, we also have those. They're dye tablets that you can put in the toilet tank.
Right.
And aerators for the kitchen and for the...
It's to give some sort of update as to what I've been doing as your lawyer for the last month. Essentially, a lot of that time has been taken up in regards to two intent to serves, one regarding the Los Osos Investment Group and the other entitled Wolcott. Basically, you're going to see those, or at least the LOIG matter, on the agenda later. Work with Rob on both of those matters. Second, and the first item that you had tonight, the drought plan, it was developing the resolution, going over the various triggers with Rob, making sure that there was some logical nexus for that plan. During the month, the district received, at least I was brought into, four public records requests and how to deal with those and how to respond. The board did adopt the Conflict of Interest Code at its last meeting, received word from the county clerk that they wanted something different, which was interesting because they provided the format for what we adopted. But what you see on the consent agenda basically further defines the financial controls and specifically applies disclosure categories to those positions, and that's a change, I believe, in Exhibit B that is on the consent calendar. There was a small personnel matter. There was a matter regarding Rosina Road and the apparent attempt to close that road and the cooperating with the Cal Fire in terms of their response to that. In regards to the water department, I already talked about the emergency regulations, some initial discussion regarding the water rate, and that discussion. Reviewed the earworm agreement. That's a another place where the county's here to help us in regards to our groundwater basin. Basically we cooperate with the county in terms of funding for that. They're developing a countywide assessment regarding the water basins in each part of the county. And it's a rather lengthy agreement, and basically you see that on the agenda tonight. And as you heard during public comment, there's been quite a bit of discussion regarding interpreting that 15-minute rule, and was engaged in that with Director Ohilski and others in regards to how that would be interpreted. In regards to litigation, and a number of people have brought it up, it's the Regional Water Quality Control Board versus LOCSD. There were two Regional Water Quality Control Board cases against this district. Both of them, for some reason, were stayed by the bankruptcy, even though the one that remains dealt with injunctive relief. This is strictly, basically, a housekeeping matter. In a case, the taxpayer's watch case, there was a judgment in regards to Measure B. In this case, we're just getting that, the final case resolved so that there won't be any litigation on there other than the ISJ, hopefully, in the future. So that's what that's about. In regards to the ISJ, there were two meetings during the month and conference calls. The primary issues that are on the table right now have to do with the financing of the basin plan improvements and the water rights issues. There is a commitment from the members of the ISJ to have the plan, the basin plan completed by the end of this calendar year, and to have the stipulated judgment completed by December, although I have to express some pessimism based upon recent meetings that that's going to actually occur. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from the board?
Yes. No, just thank you. That was very informative.
All right. The next report, LOCAC. Thank you for your patience and staying with us.
Well, I do thank you for your patience as well. I apologize that we had no LOCAC presence at your last meeting. There's no reason not to come to our meeting last week. However, I understand how these things happen. We had one referral for last month's meeting. It's a house at 1492 Valley View Drive that's under private ownership, and it's being proposed as a vacation rental. LOCAC unanimously voted, I stress unanimously on this, since vacation rentals have been touchy issues for us for quite a while now, several years. We voted to recommend approval. We will be having public meetings. The planning department will sponsor public meetings, and LOCAC will be working on it in chunks, probably, although we haven't refined our strategy for that. We will be reviewing it in depth, possibly with small study groups, and I say it again, this is so important to us as a community, because this is going to be the governing document for all land use issues and the future in the future of Los Osos, which includes water, of course. So I would like to work with you all to figure out how we could work on this together, if we can spend, I don't know how that would work. We can discuss about tactics, but some of the thoughts that have wandered through my head are perhaps your various committees could spend some time looking at the community plan update. Perhaps we could have special meetings doing some of this review work together. People often ask me whether we have a town council. It's people who don't live in Los Osos ask me that. And I always say that, no, we don't. What we have are the two parts of what would be a town council. We have the CSD, which includes the fire services and other community services, and we have LOCAC, which is responsible for land use issues, big and small. So this is since it is the governing document, this is something that it would be really useful and perhaps instructive to the community for us to work together on. So,
great.
That's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions from the board? None? Thank you again. All right, I'd like to turn to the Emergency Services Advisory Committee report.
Okay, our last meeting was canceled primarily because Phil was out of town up north, strike commander on a fire, one of the large fires. We are going to have our next meeting on September 16th. We're still working on, and we hope to have some resolution in regards to the fire flow situation. There was a comment earlier. Yes, the fire department does have the GPS for every fire hydrant in the community, including Golden State. What is missing is the fire flow pressure from the Golden State hydrants. They do not have that. and it's part of what they put into their firefighting program, so when they come to a fire, they know how much pressure is at the scene. That's what has been problematic with getting from Golden State. So there has been some movement on that, and we'll hope to have more information at the meeting on the 16th.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? No? Okay, thank you. Utilities Advisory Committee.
Yes, this will be fairly brief, as most of these items are on our agenda tonight. So our first item of discussion was the outdoor water conservation program, and with that we had a presentation by Dave Cox from Barnett of Cox, and outlining the program for the public relations outreach program. And that was, we had a nice discussion. We were able to do a little Q&A session with public on that. So it was well received. Second item we've already discussed was the emergency shortage contingency plan. And the final item on our agenda was the CIP priority final recommendations. We had a brief presentation, no changes to the draft, the draft list as we're going to see it tonight. So that is our next meeting is then, nah, we don't want to do that. We're opting out. We got it all covered. Yeah, September 10th is the joint meeting, and it is going to be held at the fire station at 5:30 p.m.
Thank you. Any more questions from the board? No? Okay. With that,
Financial Advisory Committee did not meet, and we have the joint meeting with UAC on the 10th, so I got Leonard to give that report for me. So.
All
we're
right.
Looking forward to working on that on next Wednesday.
All right, thank you. Any questions? No? All right. With that, the last item is Director Announcement of District and Community Interest and Reports on Attendance at Public Meetings, Training Programs, Conferences, and Seminars. And we have one ad hoc committee.
But I do have a question about item 11I. If I could, on page 2 of the resolution, I think that there's just a typographic error here that I want to clarify. If I look at the second last whereas, subsection C, it says this resolution adopts rules and regulations, but in fact this resolution is just adopting an outdoor water conservation plan. It's not rules and regulations. So if we could just get that change made without me pulling it, I'm fine with that.
First of all, can that be done?
If it's a Scribner's error, or basically one where a mistake was made in terms of the wording, it can be clarified in this manner. I don't believe it makes a substantial change in terms of the interpretation of it, and so the answer is yes.
Okay. So I would request, I won't pull it, but I would request that rules and regulations be substituted with the correct term, which is outdoor water conservation plan.
And General Manager Kivley, is that?
Yes. Mr. President,
correct?
that is my mistake, because okay. I'm the one that edited this, and okay. I missed that. That was
so
supposed to be removed.
It's guidance, okay?
Yes.
Any?
No, that I'm fine with that.
Do we have to make, when we do approval, do we have to make a motion about the editorial changes?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so with that, any other comments? No, from the board? With that, I'd like to move to public comments for items on the Administrative Committee Report and on the Consent Agenda.
Do I get 3 minutes?
2 minutes.
Ugh. Can't cover this. I'm here. I attend all of the Utility Advisory Committee meetings, and have for many years. And I have to object to the agenda posting of the way that all of this happened. That's why I say I need more than 3 minutes, because this is complicated. But it appears that in the packet, it appears, of course I can't find it now, that you are assuming that we have spent many weeks looking at the Barnett-Cox, many months, excuse me, June, July, and August looking at the Barnett-Cox proposal, and that it was all laid out and very clear, and we had discussion. Actually, we looked at it in August. We had Mr. Cox, I think Dave Barnett, or Mr. I don't know which one came, excuse me, and gave the presentation and talked about the $5,000 that we gave them to give us some ideas. Now, we never discussed that we were approving anything that night, and we were going to discuss it at the meeting that is next Tuesday or Wednesday. I object to this being ramrodded forward. There's a discussion. I haven't looked at the paperwork because it's not even included. Nobody's seen this plan. The Finance Committee has not seen it. Utilities has not seen it. And you're proposing $3,000 for 6 months' worth of Facebook. What is that? There's half of the people. I don't have Facebook. I don't want to have Facebook. Half of the people in this town don't even have computers. Where has this been discussed? And you guys are moving forward to approve it tonight? It needs discussion. I wish one of you would have pulled it, because you're talking about spending up to $17,000 for something that's probably going to be very ineffective, especially if you're depending on Facebook to work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I, too, am here to speak about Agenda Item 11I. And first of all, in Rob's presentation, he talked about ceasing all outdoor conservation in as soon as maybe 9 months, outdoor irrigation, in as soon as 9 months. So you're going to spend this money just to stop educating people. The irrigation stops. You have that power already. So how you get your message out shouldn't take this elaborate plan through the Barnett-Cox. The component of the plan that is the Facebook component, Director Storm has a Facebook page, and he's been on Facebook for since February and has 150 or so followers. I don't think you're going to get anywhere with Facebook in this community. You have to like it. It doesn't like you. So how you reach those Facebookers is they have to want to be your friend or like your page. And I don't know how you're going to...
And here, gentlemen, this thing is riddled with errors. I'll give you one example. In the fire department, when you add the final column down, or you add it across, it's $280,000 off, which means the total at the bottom of the page is $280,000 off. We've been waiting for this for what now, 8 months? That's not the only error here, and I'm not going to spend my whole time talking about this, but you know, I'm sure Phil's happy to have that money, but I don't believe it's there. I brought up about the water bills. You had a CPI increase, and the two cycles of water bills on the proration came out with lower water bills. Everybody at the Utilities Committee got it, got my comment. I met this week with staff, was provided the formula from your vendor. You should fire the vendor. This is a loss of revenue, gentlemen. I found the error in the formula. And when I corrected the error, it came up to the number in a three-line formula I came up with to do the proration to the exact number. By changing the formula where the mistake was, came up to the exact number it should be. How can you have a CPI increase prorated and have water bills go down on an average of $2 to $2.50 a water bill. You need to have me sit down with probably Rob to work this out, because this will continue year after year. I guarantee you, and if you don't think I'm qualified to talk about this, I guarantee you this formula is wrong.
Thank you.
Hi, Lynette Tornotsky, Los Osos. I disagree. I think Facebook is a very powerful tool. I think there were almost 500 people in the objection to McDonald's in town that signed up and went on that page. So if we got that number, that would be fabulous. I think the thing is to get the word out that there is a Facebook page. And as I wasn't in that meeting, I have not been following this, but the whole point is to have content updated frequently. And I think John Eric Storm does a very good job on that on his page. Anyway, please go ahead and sign this thing. I think we need to get moving. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Board. Chuck Sassini again. It does seem like a lot of money. I'm not sure about the efficiency of Facebook-type efforts, but I just keep wondering. It seems like water conservation has been an issue over and over and over and over, and we don't have... We're still paying for programs, ways to get the word out. I don't know. And if you haven't learned to listen to Mr. Margetson when he comes to you with a dollar item issues, something that's wrong in a formula, a bottom line that is wrong, shame on you. I mean, how many years has this been going on? How many times has anyone proven him wrong when he comes to the podium with an issue like this? Anybody counter anything that he's got to say? Anybody asking questions? You haven't learned that by now? Wow.
Thank you. Seeing no more comment, close comment on the consent agenda item. Bring it back to the board. Any discussions, comments?
I have a comment regarding the contract with Barnett and Cox. That concept of public, of going out for public relations firm, is something that has been discussed very in depth with the UAC. As the UAC member that suggested it many years ago, and it was brought up several times, and the UAC voted unanimously to do that. I called for a vote to do that. I'd have to look for sure, but because I wanted to make sure. So this board agreed with that. We allocated money for it. We have money budgeted for it. This now is, I believe, the staff's discretion. We've approved the vendor. And I think it's staff's discretion of how to proceed. I don't think the UAC would have anything to offer further with this. And Facebook is an option. And I think it would be an option down the road to see how things are going. Like to. Mm-hmm. Get a little more information.
Any comments? Well, do you have a motion on consent agenda?
I'm here. I always do this one. I'm good at this. I move that the board receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda with the correction of the Scribner error in resolution number 2014-22.
What are you doing with the financial?
I'll second. Oh my God, I'm excited. Any comment on the motion? Please.
Nope.
With that, take a vote.
Director Ohilski.
Yes.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Thank you.
With that, I need a break. So a five-minute break by that clock up there, so 9:05. No. I'd like to reconvene the meeting. minor issue. With that, general action items, item number 12A. Can I have a reading of the item?
President yes. Baltimore, before you go on, I'm going to recuse myself from this particular item. I do not have a financial stake with the parties here, but I was involved in getting the entitlements for the property at Pine and Los Osos Valley Road, and I was involved with the sale of the property to this party. So just to make sure there's no perception of conflict, I'm going to step down on this item.
All right. Very good. General Manager?
All right. Mr. President, members of the board, the item before you this evening is a conditional intent to serve request. It's a letter for property at 1173 10th Street in Los Osos, California. The APN is 038-052-027. And Rob Miller, your district engineer, will be presenting this report.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and the public. A brief background on this item. The developer, Los Osos Investment Group, purchased the property at Pine and Los Osos Valley Road that we've heard about in previous discussions. That property has some historical development on it, a total of the equivalent of 12 lots according to the regional, 12 single-family homes according to the regional board existed at one time on the property. Staff has been working with the developer to come up with a conditioned intent to serve letter that accomplishes a number of objectives. Number one, to consider the issue of water neutrality. And previously, staff had looked at this as being water neutral development because of the historical use that was being abandoned. We've corresponded with San Luis Obispo County, and they've confirmed that because of the age of some of the use, they're not considering it or treating it as water neutral. The exception to that would be the equivalent of two, and this is the first of potentially a number of such intent to serve letters. And staff has crafted an intent to serve with a number of special conditions that we're requiring the developer to meet before we grant a will serve. And I'll just briefly discuss those special conditions, and you should feel free to consult the remainder of the letter for our standard conditions. Number one is we want a written verification that the regional board has approved the use of a septic system for the property in question. The importance of this item is that if the property must connect to the sewer system in order to be developed, then it's subject to the wastewater project conditions, which at this point we believe the regional board is treating the historical use on the property as eligible for transfer to this new property at 1173 10th Street. We're also requiring the applicant to provide written verification that all the county requirements are met, and very importantly that the Coastal Commission provides the district with written verification that the project has been granted a coastal development permit and has complied with all conditions of that permit. This is assuming that it would be ultimately appealed. If not, the county would be the grantor of that coastal development permit. So we want all those conditions confirmed in writing, and then that we'll have written verification from the county that the property has properly retrofitted and offset their water use at a 2-to-1 ratio in accordance with county Title 19, and that with respect to this will serve that no credit for the historical use at Pine and Los Osos Valley Road will be granted, though again they do have, we believe in the county's eyes, two units there. For the purpose of this will serve, we want to see it fully retrofitted. The project is approved for service by CAL FIRE with any conditions, and then we have a standard legal indemnification that council has worked with us on. As far as financial impact, we'd expect to see the fees, rates, and charges applicable at the time, and legal counsel has inserted some language in the intent to serve requiring them to enter into a checking and inspection agreement so that all our costs, legal and engineering and staff time, get covered in the processing of this this intent to serve. So at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Staff recommendation is to approve the conditional intent to serve as drafted and authorize the general manager to sign the letter.
If I could just add something.
Yes.
A number of these conditions are basically a part of the plan for the revision to the intent to serve policy. This has come up before the board now. You have two options. You can go ahead and consider this item now, or you could actually continue this until your intent to serve policy, the revision to that, is made. Staff is recommending that you go forward now, but that is why you see those conditions in there that you haven't seen in other intent to serves regarding the entering into the plan check and inspection agreement and the payment of the district fees. Additionally, that there's a provision under C2 regarding this intent to serve being subject to all future, current and future rules and agreements and regulations of the district regarding water use, and that is also something that I think is fairly new to this district. So I just wanted to add those words.
Thank you. Any questions, clarification from the board?
Can you explain how this plays in with the resolution we passed earlier tonight? In other words, if we hit a certain stage, what would be the effect on this?
Yeah, let me get my stage summary out. There would be an effect, and actually in keeping with the words of Mike here, the future actions of the district to declare certain stages, this would be subject to that. And if you look at the prohibitions under Stage 4, and of course that would also include Stage 5, there's a prohibition on new water connections to the district water system under a Stage 4. So theoretically, while you're in that Stage 4 until you de-trigger or come out of it, we wouldn't be granting any will serves that would result in the physical connection while you're in Stage 4 or 5.
Thank you.
Okay, but you know, theoretically we are in Stage 5, but by rainfall, not by water quality.
Yeah, if I might, Mr. President, the way that the climate-based triggers come into effect, you would not trigger Stage 4 due to climate any earlier than April of 2016. So even though you are...
meters, 12 water meters on, do you know?
Someone else may know. It's 5 acres? I think it's five.
Five and a half. Single-family home, is that a one-bedroom, one-bath house, or is that a six-bedroom, ten-bath house?
We don't specify.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how big the lot at 1173 10th Street is.
My understanding is why I mentioned it, that this is supposed to be a trading of a water meter out. So what property does the CSD get for this one meter back at the site on Pine?
There's no contemplation of a transfer. If I'm hearing your question right, there's no contemplation of a transfer of property with this. It's only that they offset their water use with retrofits outside the prohibition zone, 2-to-1.
So since we have no size in the single-family home, they can build a lot in the CSD. I just want to make sure I understand this. And then they can build an 8-bedroom, 16-bath house back on Pine Street.
Oh, I see your question. I wasn't getting it. So the regional board has the purse strings on 12 units. I've seen the letter. And they will allow septic systems on only 12 units, which is the transfer of those historical uses.
Right.
So they wouldn't be able to get the regional board to approve a home on this property, on the Pine Street property, and in the 10th Street property.
But again, we have no control over the size of the homes.
No. I mean, council can help me, but I don't believe we typically, in these types of intent to serve letters, dictate the size of the structure.
No, but we do get more involved if it gets to the request for an actual will serve.
And doesn't the county normally determine the size based on the parcel size and the permit that they're going to issue?
Yeah, setbacks and building envelope and all the normal county
things.
What
will actually fit into that square?
I mean, Councillor, I don't know that you'd be prohibitive of having... You could, I'm sure, look at this again at the will serve stage when they've developed more detailed plans, but right now there's nothing in this letter that specifies that, although you could probably add it as a condition if you desired. I've never done that in intent to serve. I don't know if you have, Mike.
No, I have not, and I'm not sure that we... I'd have to look at it to make sure that we could do that if that's something you wanted to do.
Okay. So again, 1 meter leaves from the existing property, making it 11. A meter goes into our CSD property, and we have no control over the size of the houses or the homes on the back of the original property with 11 meters. And so we could be actually, you know, hurting the basin because you could be sucking out as much water as you want with the original 11 meters.
If I'm hearing you right, if they develop those additional 11 meters to a greater extent than they were historically used, and if the retrofits that the county requires for some reason aren't sufficient for those large homes or however that comes to play, then I suppose that's a potential.
I'm just trying to – it sounds like there's too many loose ends on what this is right now, so I'm just trying to – tie them together.
Yeah, the county does the retrofit program, not the district. So if the county comes in and looks at their building plans, they'll make a determination on the required 2-to-1 offset. There's a formula to it. And the district could certainly ask the county for confirmation that they've done it appropriately. But it's their process, not ours. We're just asking for the certificate.
Well, yeah, that's what I think is missing, is that until we know exactly what the 12 single-family homes' water use will be, how can we trade it out?
Our will serve is based on retrofitting for the one home associated with this intent to serve.
Again, that's what I'm saying. We don't know the size of the one home, right?
No, we don't. We don't typically stipulate that in an intent to serve letter. I suppose we could condition them to provide plans for that home to make sure that the offsetted water amount was in keeping with...
Well, one of the things that happens is that if you buy a home here right now in Los Osos and it has one bedroom and you want to remodel it, I mean it has one bathroom, you can't add a bathroom.
Right.
So if the existing 12 homes or the proposed single-family residents have 12 bathrooms, then you can't put two bathrooms when we trade one of the meters out. I mean, how many bathrooms are associated with each meter?
Mr. President, the developer is here this evening if you'd like to ask him those questions.
No, I want to see it approved, and I don't want it to be hearsay. I want it to be defined.
Okay. I'm just saying he's here right. And can answer that specifically as to what size house they're looking to put on.
No.
Okay.
Defined, like approved by the county, this is what will be given. 1 meter, once this house is out with that house. That's kind of what I see as a way to know that, you know, what are we switching out? What is being built? A meter is too open-ended, and so I'm just trying to see what a meter is. Again, we LOCAC just had this, you know, 300 gallons a month is what the county approved for a house up in Cabrillo Estates to use. 300 gallons a month. And so, you know, how? I have a lot of questions.
Okay. Well, the district basically has a will serve policy that says that unless we make a finding that we don't have water, that we do have water and we have to do it under an intent to serve in our policy. If you require more definition that's not usually in a standard intent to serve letter, you can give direction to staff and we'll seek it and we'll bring it back. I mean, that's...
Do we have water?
You have not made a finding. This board has not made a finding that you don't.
And so how do we find out if we have water? We haven't made a finding that we do either.
You're a water district. You're assumed to have water until you say that you don't.
So that's the question. We need to find out if we do or don't.
Okay. If you don't mind, you seem to be... If the issue is what they're asking for and getting definition for what we're asking for, that's one thing. If your main question is, do we have enough information to say that there is water for this project to provide an intent to serve, that's a different question, okay? And that can't be defined in a will serve. That's defined in what you did in your first action tonight, and it's defined by what you did in the water conservation plan. So if that's a concern, you should order us to come back and provide some additional information. As far as I know, this board has not made a finding that it doesn't have water to serve.
Okay.
And if you want to make that finding, we have to do that based upon evidence, and we'd have to bring that back to you.
Okay. Very good. All right. So don't ask my clarification questions.
I have a few questions. On number one of the conditions, you state the current basin plan. I assume that's the ISJ basin management plan that's currently a draft?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that is cleared out or is clear in the language there, what plan we're talking about.
That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's currently
not. Can you point that out to me again? Which condition are you looking at?
I'm sorry. It's number one. It says the current basin plan, but right now we have a draft. The plan hasn't been, is not currently approved.
The basin plan that item refers to, the word basin plan was never my favorite title for our basin plan because there really are two. The regional board has their own basin plan, which refers to inland discharges to ground. And this specific condition is... the regional board's basin plan. Thank you for that clarification.
The regional board. Okay. On condition three, is this? First off, let me say I'm glad. I mean, I'm glad that we're including things that we have been proposing for our policy. Is this common that as far as the Coastal Commission providing direct written verification? When we ask the Coastal Commission for that, will they know exactly what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Do they have a seed? They have a coastal development permit? Do they meet their conditions?
Okay.
Director Mudart, I just wanted to point out that in the actual intent to serve letter, the ambiguous language about the regional board basin plan under special condition B1, we changed that language to regional board requirements to be more clear than the word basin plan.
Okay.
So, but the staff note didn't get changed.
Great.
Then I'd take your opinion for this. I'll ask the question out there. Is Title 19 a successful program?
Oh, whoa.
I mean, we're hanging our hat on this, and as you know, I'm not a real big favor for 2-to-1.
Amend it later. It's not the kind of thing where it's fulfill the conditions specified in here, and then you get your will serve, right? We can change it. Am I wrong about that?
This is one of the conditions that they have to fulfill, is that they're compliant with all of our rules at the time that they apply. So it is intended to be a condition that's achievable. You know, we don't operate in a vacuum. We're a water district, but we have issues in regards to our water supply that are clear to everyone, I believe, now. And the question is whether in this environment, when we're granting intent to serves, are we going to grant somebody a intent to serve that doesn't have this condition? And whether that's a responsible thing for a board to do. This is a policy decision for you, whether you put that condition in there, and you're going to hear an argument from Mr. Edwards that it's unfair to his client to have that condition. But that condition is typical when you're dealing with a drought situation and a water basin that has seawater intrusion or less serious conditions.
Okay, I have a question. Okay, in regards to additional provisions under C2, the availability of resources, is that a legal definition or is that something we determine?
If you get to stage 4 and you say, and as a result of stage 4, that we're not issuing any more will serves, and this project does not have a will serve, then they're not going to get a will serve.
Okay. And I think, you know, if I understand what President Baltimore is talking about, I think that's one of my concerns, too, is like, okay, you have a piece of property, Pine, in LBR that is essentially Golden State water entity, okay. And if we grant an intent to serve for water in our district, what's to keep Golden State from issuing, and they do that pretty freely lately as far as issuing meters and such. And so it's like we've created, even though it's 2-to-1 under Title 19, we're still expanding, you know, putting another straw into the pond.
We don't have any control over Golden State water.
I know. Everybody. But we have a situation where, you know, that's part of this formula.
Okay. So, good question. But now that's a comment to come from the board. So, any more questions? And so we can. Okay. So now I can open up the public comment before the board discusses it. So, with that, I'd like to open up the public comment.
I'm glad I stayed. I'm either going to contribute more to your confusion or clear it up a little bit. When the process for this project, as any project, will go through, first it'll go through planning. They're aware of all the conditions that you would recommend. Then it'll come to LOCAC, where we would be happy to take input from this water district as well as any and all other comers on the project, and then it goes through several more increasingly rigorous steps. And it's my understanding that this particular property that's in question would be a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. And the way, at least my current understanding of what's going on with the Pine LOVR property and the exchange of water credits, is that it's not adding another straw, it's moving the straw. Same basin, the straw is just going down on a different piece of property.
Hi, I'm Scott Black from Los Osos Investment Group. I just want to answer the question about what we're able to build. The Regional Quality Water Board said three-bedroom homes. That's it. They didn't give us a bath count because the occupants are the ones who are going to use the water, not, you know, if there's one bath or 10 baths, they're going to use the same amount of water. So it's just three bedrooms. That's it. That's all they're letting us do. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Board. Chuck Cicinia. Thank you, Craig. Good questions. I believe you have the evidence that you don't have water. You've shut off access to the lower aquifer at your Palisades well because of salt. I thought I heard somewhere that we're 400 acre-feet a year out of balance with the groundwater basin usage. Can we retrofit enough homes to offset 400 acre-feet a year? I don't think so. Because you've got to do it outside the prohibition zone. I think about will serves for 4 or 5 years until we see how this basin stabilizes. We got to prove to the Coastal Commission that we do have adequate water before new permits are issued. How do we prove that? There's just too many unknowns here right now. I say be cautious.
Thank you.
Richard Margetson, your first item tonight, when I mentioned the nexus to development, a couple board members rolled their eyes. Now you see why I made that comment. You put triggers in to keep you out of a reason, one of the reasons, to say that you don't have an adequate water supply right now. Rob stated at utilities meeting last month, we're 400 acre feet out of balance. There's not enough retrofits left to make up 400 acre feet. Level of severity 3. I mean, what else do you need? The Coastal Commission is, I'm telling you, they're very aware of what's going on in Los Osos. They had a serious issue with another project that was before them recently, and it was based on water. They're not, you know, this project's appealable to the Coastal Commission anyway. And, you know, part of the argument that, well, if they don't build on these 12 lots around town, they could build right there at Pine. They won't build at Pine. They won't build $900,000 homes on Pine. The surrounding neighborhood won't support that type of market. That house on 10th Street is probably going to be a $1.2 to $1.8 million house when it's done because of the views and the location. Anybody been down to that lot? And I also find it very interesting that the representative for the project isn't here. You know, a lot of talk about where we are with the basin and you guys aren't doing what you should do on that. Why isn't the representative here making his argument? Probably because he doesn't want it on the record at this point, because it is appealable.
Thank you. Seeing no more public comment, I will close public comment and bring it back to the board. If you want, I can make a few comments to get the discussion going, or I can hold.
I'd like to know if we have this open-ended ability to add conditions. If your concern about them turning around and adding straws in Golden State can be added as a condition, and if not, why not?
This, all I can say is that's a condition that I've never seen, and we're talking about our territory and our ability to serve. We're not talking about Golden State's ability to serve, because that's not our decision to make. If the intent is to get more definition of this project, we've got it verbally. You would say that that's anecdotally. We'd have to see that in some sort of something that we could confirm.
But if that were the case, we could bring that back to you so you know what's happening in our district. If the concern is a broader concern as to whether or not we have water at the present time to support this project, which is based upon equivalents that the county has brought to us, you know, that's a question that you're going to have to direct staff to go back to and to try to provide you with the appropriate evidence as to whether or not we have water. At this point, we've not made any different finding.
Okay, well, it would be, okay, that's their region and that's their concern, but we're transferring it in from their region. So at the same time, we're importing their, I mean, it's a little bit different than a situation where that's their turf and this is our turf, because we are, in fact, importing the rights from over in their turf. So I guess that is, that already, just to start with, isn't every day, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay.
Well, let me just say this as we have our discussion, is that, as it was mentioned, is that I see this as the cart before the horse. The question is here, do we have water, right? So this is a policy issue. We have talked about this before when our intent to serve policies, and we've sent it back to the staff to determine if we have water. And one of the things that staff was directed to do on our intent to serve was to wait for those reports from seawater intrusion to help us decide if we have water. Because if we have water, then we're going to serve. If we don't have water, then we have to make it known to the public that we're that we don't have it. And so this is a policy intent to serve because we could not determine if we have water. And that's how I thought we were proceeding, is that until we find out if we have water, we're in stage five. We are in stage five. Why are we? It doesn't matter where the straw comes from. Why are we putting a straw in? So that's kind of where the discussion I throw to the board.
Well, also I look at it this way too, is that, you know, we're in that unique or unfavorable situation where we share the basin with an entity who doesn't really care about anything other than making a buck. And they'll, you know, drain us dry if they get a chance. And I think that somebody has to be the adult in the room, and I think that's us. And I think this is, it's bad timing. I think we need to know, do we have enough water to serve? I don't think we do, personally, but I don't know definitively. That's why I want staff to inform us to that fact. 6 months from now, you know, this may be a totally different story, but right now, I just think it's too soon, and we don't have enough information, and, you know, the basin, and we don't know how this winter is going to turn out either, you know, and I don't want them wasting time and money going down a road that they're going to get either by us in the end, we can yank it, or one of the other entities will pull it for various reasons. And so until we know on our side that this is a good deal for the district, you know, and it's not going to harm the basin, I can't support it this time.
Well, I mean, it's clear that we don't know whether we have water or we don't have water, technically. But it's, to use an analogy, you don't go to the store and go up to the cash register knowing whether you have money or don't have money. You generally wait and check before you go to the cash register and check it out. So we have to assume we don't have water because we don't know either way. Frankly, it is interesting. We have an opportunity here because we talked about these conditions, and bluntly, we were setting these conditions thinking nobody in their right mind would come and try to get an intent to serve on these conditions. But apparently, this is somehow still appealing to come and try to attempt to get an intent to serve letter. This whole thing with water meter from water meter, I can't wrap my brain around it. I don't get how that, it's not explained well or something, but it just doesn't seem kosher. I'm sorry. there's just something I just don't get. And as far as the Title 19, I've gone on record of saying I'm not really a fan of this 2-to-1 retro, whether you really save water or not with that plan. So at this time, I have too many doubts in my mind right now to move forward on this myself.
The one thing I would like to just ask again real quickly is, we are the adult in the room, and so if we have the opportunity to take this in and get control over it and put conditions on it that are good for the basin, then we have that control. If we don't, and you know, it seems to me probable that they're not going to build the same kind of thing at the Pine and Vine Street, but I don't know. That's a big assumption to make. If we leave it to Golden State, we all know what they're going to do. They're going to be irresponsible. They're not going to be the adult in the room. They're going to plunder the basin. So my question about the condition was, if we can pull this in and do it more responsibly than they can, I think that would be a net positive for the basin. But again, I don't have the information on what the contingency plans and all that, and I'd hate to speculate.
Dr. Muthart?
Yeah, I just want to, I mean, I know we've thrown around some cliches, if you will, but, you know, we don't really know that Golden State is going to be that irresponsible. You know, we are working with them on the ISJ. We're negotiating. We're trying to be good partners. They've shown some faith in being good stewards of the basin as well. So I just want to throw that out there. We don't really know that they would be so non-caring, but that my opinion still stands.
Okay. Dr. Wright, anything?
Well, no. I you know, going back what...
No. Thank you. You know, I think, again, it's a policy issue, and I don't think it's moving straws. That's a very good analogy, because I think Golden State has a pocket full of straws. And I don't think Golden State is a good steward of the basin, and just because they're bad doesn't mean we have to be bad with them. But at the same time, what Director Storm said, this might be an opportunity to see if we can somehow put, what do you call it? Not restrictions, but we can put conditions on Golden State. So I recommend that we continue this, give direction to staff to see if we can indeed, or what are our options as far as putting conditions on Golden State of taking all their existing meters and not increasing them, you know, that type of thing. Right now, no new meters, and then we'll talk about the swap, that type of thing. I'm just giving us idea. Yeah.
I have another question for council. I know that, you know, we're trying to get countywide a more uniform intent to serve policy.
Yes.
Amongst the purveyors. Is that government purveyors, or does that include private, such as Golden State and
It's government
mutuals?
Purveyors.
Pardon me?
Government purveyors.
Just government. So that, you know, this unified intent to serve condition is not something that can be levied onto Golden State.
No, they have to voluntarily adopt whatever conditions they do.
Okay, thank you.
So with that, I look to the board to continue this item with direction to staff to see what sort of conditions we can place on Golden State, such as no more new meters until the basin level is determined.
Well, I can support that motion, but I'm not sure what we can. Can you explain what we can do with Golden State as far as conditions for them?
It's proceeding on two avenues, or at least one avenue that I'm aware of. Okay, you're taking an action maybe to continue this item. There is the ISJ. This issue is being discussed at ISJ in terms of development within the infill within the district and how we go about doing that and what restrictions should be on it.
As Rob indicated earlier, they have developed a plan that they need some sort of support from the PUC to adopt. You know, those are all things that are going on that we don't control. I think the idea that this district is going to develop some rule that will apply to Golden State, there's nothing you can dictate to them.
No, more towards the health of the basin.
Right. Well, that's something that supposedly we could all get our hands around and support. And I took what Director Muthart said and agree with it, that I'm not their customer, Director Wright, so I don't know how they treat you. So I'm not speaking from your point of view, but they tend to show good faith on these types of issues. There's other times when on other types of issues that don't deal with the basin health that I would want them to be different about. But on this, they talk the talk. They haven't walked the walk yet, but we'll see.
So maybe the way of putting it isn't, you know, what kind of restraint we can put on Golden State itself, but what kind of restrictions we can put in maybe our intent to serve policy, or at least in these cases where we're swapping from their turf to our turf, that the concern President Baltimore raised about, you know, then turning around and putting more straws in doesn't happen. And if we can't do that, then I think we have a big problem. If we can, then I see a window of opportunity to bring to improve the situation. Yeah. And you know, get it under the adults' control, so to speak. I don't think we can actually, you know, do anything to them directly.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. But what Mr. Seitz said is, you know, there's plans, ISJ things are coming forward, and when those things come out, it sounds like we're going to have a lot more clarity. So let's continue it until that happens.
Well, and I think that goes along with the continuation, and also I think if we can, through the ISJ, inform Golden State this is what we're looking for us, and we need them to, you know, more or less agree with the same precepts.
Yeah. Right.
That's what needs to be done.
Right. Our job is not to say no. It's to look for proper maintenance and health of the basin. So a continuance with waiting to see what these other plans are.
We've made that point. We will reiterate it.
Okay. Good.
But it
second.
I'll second it.
Okay.
I have no problem seconding it. All right.
Okay.
With that, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none,
take a vote. I just want to hear it again.
We continue this so that the board can consider it under the revised intent to serve policy.
Okay. Thank you.
Call vote.
Are you thinking, Director?
Yeah. I'm just trying to. Okay. Discuss later. Let's take a roll call vote.
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Oh, we need a motion to go past 10. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you.
Was that to adjourn at 10 or continue?
No, it's to continue.
Oh, I withdraw my second.
So with that, I'd like to move to general action item 12B.
Wait, you got to take... Don't you have to do
it? Oh, we have to take a vote on the motion?
Yes.
Okay. Take a vote on the motion to extend the meeting past 10 o'clock.
Director Ohilski? Vice President Wright?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
The lawyer.
Okay. Yeah. So now, general action item B is adopt... General Manager Kibley, okay. Can you
yes.
present the item?
The item before you this evening is adoption of the 2014 San Luis Obispo County Integrated Water Management Plan.
I told you I'd put it
And what this is it's the county IRWM plan. And presenting, thank you, and presenting the item is Margaret Faulkner. Thank you.
Okay, just one minute before we start. Thank you, Mr. Miller. For all right.
Good evening.
It is on. Now it's off.
Well, I guess we'll have to go.
Okay. Sorry. Okay, this item is to adopt the 2014 San Luis Obispo County Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. We call it EARWORM for short. So, for a little background, Senate Bill 1672 was established the EARWORM Act in 2002, and then California voters passed a series of propositions establishing funding efforts under the state's EARWORM program, and it's administered by the State Department of Water Resources. In September 2012, your board signed a memorandum of understanding as a participant of the EARWORM for the SLO County region. And the Flood Control District is the lead agency under the MOU, and collectively all the other, there are 23 members, agencies, they're referred to as the Regional Water Management Group. The EARWORM plan has been developed in accordance with state standards and with extensive participation from the Regional Water Management Group, Water Advisory Committee, which we call the RAC, and the general public. So we have a link to the entire document on our website, and I also included the executive summary in this board packet for everyone. It's also important to note that this plan is considered a living document, and because we'll be able to add projects to it. Right now we do have our 8th Street Upper Aquifer Well as one of the projects. And having projects in the EARWORM plan also opens doors to more grant funding. So one of the eligibility requirements of the EARWORM program is that this plan be formally accepted by resolution or other written documentation by the governing bodies of each agency that are part of the regional management group. So your resolution number 2014-21 is on the agenda for your consideration to adopt the 2014 SLO County EARWORM plan. And I didn't catch the typo until this publication went out, but so the motion you need to make is to change the resolution number 2014-21 to match the actual resolution in your packet. And that's my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
I just have a comment. I just want to, you know, thank staff and everyone involved on this thing, because this is a heavy lifting project here. Yeah. There's been a lot of time, a lot of effort on it, and I think I just want to thank everybody involved.
And just again, I echo those thanks, and just for my own understanding and clarification,
it's a planning document. You know, we will have to meet any of the environmental conditions once we have a project that we start working. But this is just a plan, so they require this notice of exemption for us to sign, and Kathy gets to sign it.
It's a CEQA determination regarding taking this action.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. And do we know, then, we're in the plan, so just briefly, what's the next step to make it? Is that easy?
Yeah. Actually, the Board of Supervisors have already approved it. A lot of other agencies have already approved it. And they're just waiting for the very last ones to get their resolutions in, and it goes to the state. They've already submitted the draft to the state, and it's already come back to the county with 100% satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Now, there was an additional emergency draft drought regulation section, so some of those projects got put into that drought emergency, mm-hmm. and they haven't heard back on whether, you know, yeah. they're going to get any money on those or not, but the whole plan, the DWR is very happy with, so
okay.
that's, I have to give Carolyn Berg a lot of kudos on that one, and Bill knows we've worked mm-hmm. with our regional group too, so there's a lot of work has gone into this. But we will be able to, like I said, every 2 years, if you look at the time schedules on here, they will be soliciting for, you know, projects. And so the more we can move on in our projects, like right now we've got, you know, starting the coastal development project right. for the 8th Street and for other upper aquifer or other wells, you know, we can start putting those into this plan. But the closer when it comes to implementation, they really want you to be much closer to shovel ready. So
right.
that means you have to jump through a lot of hoops first.
Yeah, so it's important for us to maintain a pipeline of projects in the plan, get them into
from our
CIP early.
List. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have our CIP list, and we know what's in the basin plan, and,
right. Right.
and that's what our priorities would be.
And starting the permitting process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The one question on that emergency: did they add extra money to the pot when they did the emergency drought?
I don't recall.
Or is it? They took money away.
Uh-huh. From the other. Yeah, I don't.
Thanks, Bill. Okay.
All right. Any other questions? No?
All right.
Thank you.
Just remember to amend your motion.
Yes, remember to amend the motion. With that, I'd like to go to public comment.
Bill Garfinkel, I'm speaking for S&T Mutual Water Company. I got to say, our board meetings never last this long. but at our last board meeting, we did approve the earworm. I think Margaret has filled you in on everything. But I just got to say that I've worked with Margaret now on this for several years. She's been doing a fabulous job with the program, and I think she deserves all your congratulations and support on this job. And as she said, the state has approved. Not approved. They said our submission meets their criteria 100%. So as soon as we get these last signatures from a few of the agencies, then hopefully we keep our fingers crossed, because we compete with a central region, which includes four counties, and there's a sum of money allotted to those counties, and so we're competing with those for funds on this. But again, thank you, and I do hope you support this.
Thank you. Seeing no other comment, close public comment, bring it back to the board for discussion. Director Olszewski.
Yeah, going through the staff report, I just realized we signed the MOU. I signed the MOU 2 years ago. It seems like it wasn't that long ago, so time really is flying by here. But I think there's no question that they've been, I mean, when Leonard and I were on the rack, I think that came back at that time. So I mm-hmm. think we've been very supportive of this, and I fully support the resolution.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I have a motion with an amendment?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and I move that the board adopt the resolution number, and what is the?
2014-21.
Okay, 2014-21, adopting the 2014 San Luis Obispo County IRWM plan.
I'll second that.
Application before you, and that's for a Gary D. Orbach. And with that, concludes my report.
Well, thank you. Any questions or clarifications? Questions?
Well, I was making a
comment.
No. Oh, public comment first.
Okay, seeing none. I'd like to open up public comment on the agenda item. Seeing no public comment, close public comment. Bring it back to the board. I would, as president. No. I have to make the appointment first. I'd like to make the appointment of Gary Orbach to the FAC. With that, I'd like to open up discussion on the board. So, the chair of the FAC, Director Olszewski, would like to say anything?
Having reviewed the qualifications, I think that he's well qualified for the position. I don't know him personally. However, I would also say that we have had two alternates move up as regular members this year, so it may be he doesn't serve as alternate for that long. But I think from his qualifications, again, I do not know the person personally, but from his qualifications, he looks like he's well-suited for the position.
Any other comments?
Well, yeah, I agree. I know Gary. I've known him for over 20 years. I think he's going to be a good asset to FAC. I think one interesting side note is since we are dealing with Vista de Oro, he lives in Vista de Oro. So, yeah. No, I think it might be good. Might be good. So I'm glad that Gary applied.
Any other comments from the board? With none, do I have a motion?
I'll move.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
Yeah. Do we need a roll call on this?
Yeah, I have to confirm the appointment.
Oh, okay. Can I have a roll call? Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, can I have a roll call vote?
Vice President Wright?
Yes.
Director Storm?
Yes.
Director Muthart?
Yes.
Director Uhilski?
Yes.
President Baltimore?
Yes.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to move to item 14, which is future agenda items. Do I have any suggestions from the board?
No.
Okay.
No.
That closing comments from the board. Director Storm?
I'd just like to say thanks. There's a lot of staff work that went into this particular meeting. Thanks to the staff. I wish I would have remembered to say it before many of them left, but I'll say that to them in person, and I think this was a positive meeting, and thanks to everybody.
Director Moonhart.
Yes, thank you, everybody. That's well said. There was a lot of material to go through on this, and appreciate the hard work. I do want to make a plug, the Los Osos Rotary Club. Is presenting our 7th annual celebration of the generations of Grandparents Day. Grandparents Day is officially on September 7th this year, which is it's a national day. It's always on the first Sunday after Labor Day. Our theme, of course, is old goats and little kids. So it's a great family fun day. It is on Sunday, September 7th, it starts at 11 o'clock and goes till 3 o'clock. There's live entertainment featuring Good Time Rock and Roll by a band by the name of Route 66, I guess is the better way to put that. It's at Baywood Elementary School, if I didn't mention that. There's games, contests, face painting, balloons, bounce houses, and more. Barbecue burgers, hot dogs, and all the fixins. There's also a raffle, like all good Rotary functions. So there's big.
And how much do those raffle tickets cost, if I might ask?
Oh, glad you asked. They are $2 a piece, or, now here comes the good stuff, 3 for $5, 7 for $10, or 15 for $20. Okay, so that the prizes are the grand prize is a week stay in a cabin in Sequoias. Second prize is a Microsoft Surface tablet. The third prize is a family entertainment basket, which we totaled up how much it's worth right now. It's up to $435 in gift certificates to restaurants and stores throughout Los Osos and the area. And then there'll be prizes. We have lots more prizes. Those prizes you do not have to be present to win, but then there's prizes drawings throughout the day of other prizes, many other gift certificates, good stuff. It's just a great fun.
The advisory committee and staff and yourself, Leonard. So I wanted to express my appreciation for that because I know since I've been on the board, it's been something we've been talking about. But now we've actually got an ordinance adopted. So I think that I'm really happy with that, and I appreciate all your guys' hard work. That being said, I get to do the cleanup week. So cleanup week for everybody next week. All your stuff that you want have been holding in your garage for 6 months. It's now time to get out. Or longer, yeah. It's now time to get out there. So with your regular pickup next week, you will have the opportunity to put additional information, or pardon me, additional trash out with your pickup. So next week, if you need any information, you can call toll-free 543-0875. Of course, that's a local phone number. So
I'd just like to add on that the bulky items, it's $10, and you do have to call ahead to reserve to get those picked up, and it's on your regular trash day.
Yep, your regular trash day next week. Very so, again, good. I'd like to thank everybody for all the hard work on those ordinances.
And Vice President Wright.
Yes, I'd like also, this, since I've been on the board, you know, the water items and stuff, it's been pretty intense, and I think there's been some really good work product coming out. And, you know, again, with the subcommittee and the committee and the staff, it's just, it's good to see, you know, a good product, you know, come forward and something that is going to be beneficial to the district and to the basin. And then the other thing I'd like to add to is a reminder in regards to the fire safety fair October 11th at Vaughn's. Greg, you can tell it too.
Okay.
All right, you got another month. And I'm announcing I will not be here next month, so you get to do that
all
next
right.
month. So that's my conclusion.
All right. Thank you. I just, other than the fire safety fair, honestly would like to thank the public comment. They were excellent comments. Got lots of notes. So with that, meeting adjourned, and God bless.